Blog Talk Radio.
This broadcast is the property of E2G Sports Network, E2GSports.com, and E2G Sports LLC.
Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Triple Threat Tuesday Hoop Show from Ear to the Ground Sports, the Unsung Sports Grid. Here are your hosts, Ryan Beatty and Ryan Edwards.
Real great to hear that. It's an intro. Takes me back to the days of the old NBC Sunday afternoon games. Celtics Bulls, Bird Jordan, you know. The old days for us old-timers. Somebody who's not an old-timer, on the other side, Ryan Beatty, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good. You know, every time I hear that intro, it just makes me miss Kevin Garnett back in the Garden, back when we had a working big man.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Triple Threat Tuesday Hoop Show. Buddy Andre in for Ryan Edwards, along with Ryan Beatty. Here to take you around the league and the tournament. And big things have happened. We're whittled down to, what, six right now. Half the Final Four has been determined. The other half, ready to go tonight. And we'll see what happens. But just your thoughts of the weekend of college hoops before we get into the pros.
Unfortunately, this is usually the time of year where the Cinderella runs usually come to an end, and that's exactly what we've seen so far. Baylor and Houston, props to them for making it this far. But I'm really impressed with what Oregon State was able to accomplish this year. I mean, I would say probably 2% of brackets picked them to go to the Elite Eight, and, you know, they really demolished some teams while getting there. So, hats off to that team. They played great defense throughout the tournament. Just unfortunately, it didn't go all the way.
Yeah, I was kind of sad to see Syracuse go the other night. I was having family moments, texted my family who was still left with us. We lost one of the original season ticket holders from the 60s. That is pretty crazy. When Jim Boeheim was a player, amongst my grandfather and my uncle and the whole group of them who used to go to the games at that point in time. To the point where I think I may have to jump in as far as one of the season ticket holders for Syracuse to keep it going for the family. So we'll see what happens there. They had a nice little run. But what are your predictions for tonight's game while I get dialed in on the other side?
I got Gonzaga probably by a healthy margin, probably 10, 11 points. And then it's a toss-up. UCLA has been an amazing run. A play-in team with a chance to make it to the Final Four is pretty remarkable. Michigan clearly has proven that they're still a very strong team, even without Livers. I'm going to have to say Michigan by about 5 points tonight. Unfortunately, I think the run's going to come to an end. This team just has too good of a defense and too potent of an offense. You know, they don't take bad shots. Dickerson clearly just is a difference maker when he's out there. He's a 7-foot freshman who really has been unguardable since the season start. And I think you're going to see a Gonzaga versus Michigan in the Final Four, and that's going to be a really good game. And I'm really excited for tonight's games as well as the Final Four. You there, buddy?
Do I sound okay now?
You do. He's back.
All right, good. We pulled the trick there. Here was the deal. We'll take you behind the radio. I had to bring my oldest daughter Hadley to dance, and I was filling in for six. So I started the show on the phone, and now I'm on my Google Voice with my
home studio setup, so I was trying to switch over quietly, but I hadn't put my microphone on yet, so we're up and running. But do we want to talk about that Michigan-Gonzaga game, if it possibly happens, like what we could see for key matchups?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jalen Suggs has emerged to be almost the best guard in college basketball, just given the longevity of, you know, their tournament run. And I mean, he just, it doesn't seem like he has a weak point. And, you know, he's going to be going up against Mike Smith, an Ivy League guy that has transferred into Michigan and has really helped that team out. You know, these are two heady guards that are probably the best controlled players in the game right now, just because they play with such great pace. They make smart decisions. And it's just going to be a dogfight between two teams that are well-coached. Juwan Howard has done an amazing job with Michigan, and of course Mark Few has emerged to be one of the best coaches of all time over in Gonzaga. So I expect game to be low scoring and, you know, come down to a couple of possessions, just given the fact that these teams are just so smart and, you know, they don't turn the ball over.
I was just thinking of how we were kind of off on that Michigan-Florida State game being the game of the tournament. Didn't end up being what we both expected. We were both kind of looking at that as like, wow, I can't wait to see that one, and it's 32-21 at the half, and before you know it, you know, they're moving on, and Florida State is not. If you want to talk a little bit, we're going to go into the trades, just so I can zoom I get somebody walking in the house. The Aaron Gordon trade. If you want to talk about Aaron Gordon trade, and what do you think of him going to Denver?
Yeah, so I think this is a situation where the Celtics really missed out. I don't know the exact reason why Aaron Gordon was not coming to Boston, but it really seemed like, you know, he was already booking a flight to Boston. The rumors were true. Everyone wanted him here in Boston. And, you know, I think the bottom line was that the Magic were asking for Marcus Smart, and the Boston Celtics were not willing to give up Marcus Smart. So I think the Nuggets kind of slope in late, and they made an amazing deal. They got a player where, you know, that team with bringing in Aaron Gordon and, you know, that whole dynamic. Jokic is probably the best big man in the league. I think that team could really go far in the playoffs. And, you know, it's just really saddening to see that the Celtics really missed out on something that seemed as a done deal at the trade deadline. It seemed like Aaron Gordon really wanted to come to Boston, and unfortunately it didn't happen. I really am amazed by it. And, I mean, I can keep going on about this, but if you're back, buddy, I'll move on to somebody else.
Just going on to Victor Oladipo going to Miami for two former Celtics.
Yeah, that had to be one of the weirdest moves I've seen. It seemed like it's really sold short. I mean, if you boil it down, James Harden was dealt for Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk. If you really look at what has happened in the transaction market, you know, they didn't even get Caris LeVert out of the deal. That's just, or they did, but, you know, he's not completely healthy, and that's just really depressing if you're a Houston fan. You know, they had such a great asset in James Harden, where a lot of teams were willing to give a lot for him, and, you know, they just ultimately dropped the ball on this. And Houston, they wound up with Victor Oladipo. It was clear that Oladipo did not want to be here, and I feel for that organization kind of having to start from scratch. But let's talk about this Miami Heat team. This team made it to the finals last year, built on defense, built on, you know, perimeter scoring with a dynamic big in Bam Adebayo, and they bring in my books, an NBA All-Star in Victor Oladipo. I think this team could really go places, and
hopefully make it a little further this year.
Yeah, no, was an interesting trade, kind of one of the last ones to trickle through. Before we talk about P.J. Tucker, I believe we got our good friend Lou on the line. I'll set you up with Lou as things quiet down here in the Android household. Lou, what did you think of the trade deadline?
Well, I think some might have done better than others. I mean, the Nets are at their primed and ready. I mean, Oladipo and Miami, they're thinking a heap of trouble. I'm glad the Knicks, though, didn't trade anybody because we have a good solid lineup, and, you know, this is our best I think we've done in quite some time. So I'm happy with that. Lakers are a little bit shaky now. I'm not so sure about, you know, what people have been saying, how they're still, like, tops in the East. I mean, the West, rather, because, you know, their two star players are hurt. So they got their work cut out for them. Maybe they should have asked for a trade.
That's a good point. Is I don't know if this Lakers team is going to come back as the team that we all know.
Yeah.
You know, those are two tough injuries. And Anthony Davis, it's been what, 2 months since he's played? I don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in. I'm not worried about LeBron. He's probably still works out every day. He'll probably bounce back really easily.
Oh, yeah,
but
he does.
The overall chemistry of that team is going to be a little bit off. And without the leadership that they have, they're going to probably lose
now the Rockets, they
a
need
lot
help.
In the next couple of weeks. What's that?
Yeah, you
the
just,
Rockets need
just
help.
Just saying the Rockets need help. You were right about that with the losing streak and just a lot of draft picks, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're right at the bottom. And, you know, maybe they're vouching for Evan Mobley or Jalen Suggs, and they'll probably get an NBA superstar to come in this draft. But this team was in the Western Conference semifinal last year and really had probably the best chance to beat the Lakers last year. It's just an amazing drop-off to a team that was so close a year ago, and now they're just back to the drawing board. It's sad, but it's the nature of this league.
Well, it's nature in every league, you know. I mean, there are some teams that are going to, you know, make a run for a playoff and maybe even get the championship, and others are going to be in the dumpster. Oof.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And another team we saw the other night, Oklahoma City, boy, trading with Houston at one point in time. There's a lot of draft picks between those two teams, especially Oklahoma City. They have something ridiculous, like 37 draft picks over the next 8 years. And
now that is ridiculous.
Like, you have to move some of those picks for players at some point in time. You absolutely have to. You cannot bring 37 young guys on the roster over the next 7 years. You got to have some type of veteran leadership or the money to go out and get that type of star who you can place all these young pieces around.
Yeah, and I mean,
37 draft picks, that's a lot.
A resurgence of OKC as well as the Miami Dolphins at the same time. It seems like they just really went all in for the future, and I hope it works out. I mean, this franchise has been absolutely demolished since the Kevin Durant trade, and they've really gotten rid of all talent that they've had ever since then. So it's just a franchise that it's shooting in the dark. I think they realize that they probably won't be able to field a team that's good enough to even make the playoffs at this point. So they really need to start from scratch and hope to be a contender in years to come.
Yeah,
Mus, any last-minute thoughts, Lou, just as far as the schedule the next few weeks, maybe some teams jostling, teams that improved, teams that you think didn't improve?
Well, I would say that, you know, Houston definitely has not improved. Lakers are falling off like a rock now with those injuries. Clippers, I'm not too sure about. The Jazz, though, they're on a run here. I mean, the Jazz are going to be, you know, tops in the West. The Nets are going to be in the East with all their acquirements in the last couple of weeks. So I think we're looking this to shape up as the Nets. But again, thinking, watch out for the Sixers because they're the ones that are on our tail. So we really got to keep a close eye on that. But it's going to be coming down to that, who's going to be the best in the East between the Sixers and the Nets.
Yeah, quite interesting. And just last question for you, Lou. What do you think of the Phoenix Suns? Because this is a team Ryan came into the season very high on, and they are way up there in the standings.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Achieving
that,
much
Phoenix
more than people
never,
thought.
Phoenix has not been, you know, the powerhouse team, you know, for many years now. I mean, you haven't seen it, you know, in about 25 years, and they have been the surprise team of the year. They made the last year when they made the playoffs, and they've built on that. So that's been my surprise this year.
All right, Lou, well, thank you for your weekly contribution. If you want to plug your show, feel free to, my friend.
All right, it's called Houston's a Dumpster Fire, a.k.a. the Enhanced Sports Show. We're on Saturdays, 5 to 7 East Coast time. The number to call is 512-543-4662. Number again, 512-543-4662. Hope you get a chance to call in.
All right, you have yourself a great week, Lou. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
So, Lou on. So, still, I can't decipher if it's the Nets or the Knicks, but that's a conversation for maybe off the air. We'll figure this all out.
Definitely.
P.J. Tucker, the next player we'll talk about who got moved, moves to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We see him twice against the Celtics last week. What do you think of this move?
I think it's a great one. This is a team that I definitely anticipated to get a little stronger near the trade deadline. And P.J. Tucker is an asset. You know, he's not somebody that's going to go for 40 every night. He's not going to, you know, change and move the needle scoring-wise. But he's just one of those guys that's willing to win. You know, he's got a motor. He's gonna get defensive stops. He's going to dive for loose balls. And, you know, it's really becoming kind of an asset for every winning team is to have a couple guys on the roster that are willing to do that. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of superstars, they work hard, they play hard, but they don't always give you that extra edge on, you know, fighting for loose balls or giving that, you know, fighting spirit in order to win games. And that's what P.J. Tucker brings. I think it's a very valuable asset to a team that could win the finals. You know, they needed to get better. They locked up Giannis for this amount of time. Now it's time to build around him. And P.J. Tucker is one of those guys that can get it done. And I really wanted him to go to the Suns because I think he would have been a great spell for a Jay Crowder or a Saric. And, you know, he really fits into a lot of lineups.
No, I look at him and the fit in Milwaukee is the right word underachieved the last 2 years? Like they were kind of on the verge of being that team that should have gone to the finals definitely last year. Is he a type of guy you bring in to lead a room or add a little bit more toughness to a room that probably needs that?
Yeah, I mean, he brings a veteran presence, and I'm sure he's one of those no-nonsense guys. You know, he's going to tell you how it is if he doesn't like what's going on, someone's slacking off, he's probably going to be the guy to do it. I don't know Giannis enough to be that kind of presence. I know he's super competitive and he wants to win, but I mean, from what I've seen in interviews and post-game press conferences, he seems kind of timid and he doesn't really seem like a confrontational kind of guy. So I think P.J. Tucker might kind of grab that locker room and be like, hey, I'm this old, you know, I've been around. I want to win right now, so let's do it. And I think that's kind of the energy that team needs in order to not have one of those playoff faults as they had in years past.
Just, I mean, you look at last year, the Heat were up 3-0 on them. I mean, granted, the Heat went to the finals. They beat the Celtics too, but just the mental toughness you got to worry about with that franchise. A guy who got bought out, sent home, bought out, Andre Drummond. We hear the Celtics and the Lakers, and unfortunately for us here, he goes to the Lakers and is probably the starting center there for the time being. What does Andre Drummond bring to the world champs?
You know, Everyone was talking about this move when the buyout talk started, and we know the injuries to Anthony Davis, but I really didn't think this team needed Andre Drummond. You know, they got Marcus Gasol, they got Montrezl Harrell. They're going to get Anthony Davis back at some point. I don't really think he's really going to move the needle in L.A. They got so many bigs. It's going to be an interesting rotation for them. That, you know, what does Drummond bring to them that they don't already have? You know, he's more of an inside presence than a Marcus Gasol and I guess a Montrezl Harrell. But I would have thought that Andre Drummond would have ended up at a team that really needed a big guy. I don't think the Lakers needed a big guy. And maybe it was a last gasp effort, knowing that they might not be a high enough seed, so they're going to draw some tough matchups. But I don't think Andre Drummond really is going to change much in L.A. I still think, you know, they are a contending favorite, but it's not going to be a savior. You know, I don't think he's really going to change much going on over there, and I really expected him to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised he didn't end up in Boston. I thought that would have been a nice little fit. Originally from Connecticut, the whole bit. I just thought he might be an East Coast type guy and surprise everybody by playing in Boston over L.A., but I guess not. Speaking of ring chasers, the guy who's faltered, got bought out in San Antonio. What do you think of LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Nets?
This hurts. This hurts a lot. This is one of the guys that I was really expecting to land after Blake went to the Nets. I really wanted LaMarcus Aldridge to come to the Celtics. I know that contract's a nightmare, but we could have had – I mean, actually, no, the Nets got him for way cheaper now that I think about it in the buyout. You know, if we grasped either one of these guys – I think it really would have helped us. We dropped the ball on Aaron Gordon. I thought Blake was going to be a Celtic, and you know, my last effort was for LaMarcus Aldridge, and of course he goes back to the Nets, where, you know, I really thought they were done. I thought they were done with moves for the year. They've really been all over the trade market, and you know, now signing both Blake and LaMarcus Aldridge, this team is a lot of heady veterans who are hungry to win, and, you know, come playoff team, this team is going to be very scary and even better than probably the Miami Heat when they had the big three there. You know, they're going to really just blow through this Eastern Conference in my prediction.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Them and the Sixers, half game of each other right now for the home court. Can the Sixers give them a run at all?
I don't think so. I haven't seen enough of the 76ers where, you know, they're just court dominant. You know, they have a good record this year, but they have a lot of games that have been very close. They've had a lot of injuries. Embiid really hasn't been healthy for a long stretch his entire career. I think Ben Simmons, his limitations become very real in the playoffs. And I don't believe in the Philadelphia 76ers as much as everyone else is right now. I think they need another piece where, you know, if they had Jimmy Butler like they did that one year and they signed him to a max deal, which definitely would have been the better option given what we saw out of him last year, this team would have been far better. They really, you know, they have two great pieces, but I don't think they're NBA Finals ready as everyone else kind of thinks. That it's going to be them and the Nets. I think the Nets absolutely blow them away. Might even be a 4-0 sweep.
Wow, all right. Now, Orlando really did some moving. You know, the center goes first, goes to Chicago, Vucevic. And then we're hearing the Celtics maybe in on Gordon and Fournier. The Fournier trade happens. Then we hear they may be adding Gordon to the trade to the Celtics, and then we hear Gordon to the Nuggets. We were kind of keeping in contact with each other all morning, just on how things we were hearing. Ultimately, you know, we talked about Aaron Gordon going to the Nuggets, Vucevic going to Chicago for Otto Porter Jr., and was it Wendell Carter Jr.?
It was, yes.
yes, and some draft picks. And Evan Fournier ultimately ends up with the Celtics, Danny Ainge's first draft day, trade deadline trade in 6 years since since Isaiah Thomas was traded to the Celtics. What do you think Evan Fournier brings, minus what everybody saw last night? Don't go off what you saw last night. Kind of like what Brad Stevens said, it was a blip on the radar. But what do you think Evan Fournier brings to this team, and do you think it's a long-term fit?
I really like him. You know, last night had to be probably one of the hardest first impressions, especially with such a judgmental fan base in Boston. You know, it was the first game with fans back in the Garden. You know, we just had a big trade, and we're excited to see him kind of be the savior. And, you know, that stuff happens. I've had my share of games where you just can't put the ball in the basket. It's just the way this game is played, and, you know, it's just one of those off nights. I really hope that nobody's looking too far into it. I think this guy can really help us. He's a scorer. He plays very efficient basketball on a given night. You know, I really expected to see at least 15 from him last night, but it is what it is. He might have been nervous. I mean, playing in Orlando is a hell of a lot different than playing in Boston, especially with, you know, you look into the Garden, you see all those banners. I'm sure it brings some nerves back into your system when, you know, you're in Orlando and you aren't really expected to win. If you win, great, but no one really cares at the end of the day. You come to Boston, you're expected to win and perform on every night. So I really want people to cut him some slack. I know everyone is all over that game last night.
Yeah, a lot of talk. 0-for-10 shooting. Closest was that layup that Peyton Pritchard put back. Some really bad shots. It looked like he was trying to force it, and you can probably see it in your mind, that shot from just inside the left arc three-point line, where he leaped forward and totally just missed everything. At that point in time, you could tell he was really pressing and starting to feel the pressure, and he was the first one to send Marcus Smart off the court when he got ejected last night. So this really shaped up the league. Oh, go for it. Go for it.
So I actually had the pleasure of playing in the Garden back when I was a senior in high school. And, you know, that was nothing like an NBA atmosphere. I know yesterday wasn't really a vintage Garden atmosphere, but there was fans. There was some noise. There's some chatter. But when I first went to that free throw line, and it was just me in the basket and my own thoughts, first free throw, it nicked the front rim, I want to say, and just looked absolutely horrible. When that ball came back to me the second time, I was looking around like, oh, man, I hope I at least hit the rim. It was a very nerve-wracking feeling, and I can only imagine what it's like when you're on the biggest stage. You're in Boston. I know he's a pro, but it's a nerve-wracking feeling, and I'm someone that I guess kind of – notice this, and I hope, you know, he shakes off the nerves and plays his normal basketball next game.
I got to ask you, what, just going from, like, you know, as an old Rochester grad myself, going from that gym to playing in the New Garden, is it the sight lines? Is it like you're there and you're looking up at the banners? Like, just kind of give me that feeling, like if you came in there as a road player, you know, as a rookie, are you looking up at those banners and going, holy crap, look at all those numbers retired? Like, what was that feeling like?
I mean, as somebody that has studied kind of the Celtics history, it was really special for me. Just kind of knowing all the talent that is, you know, maybe not on the same parquet, but the same venue. And they've all come in there, and there's been such a cherished amount of victories that have come through that place, where I even think back to the 08 season where we shocked LeBron here at the Garden. And I think it's just a feeling that I don't want to call, like, the younger generation of NBA players probably, like, I don't even know what the word is, but it seems like they don't have the same appreciation for the older guys, just given the recent kind of debates between generations, and I can speak very, very clearly on the fact that when I walked in there, it was just historic to me. We got to walk through the locker room and seeing all that going on, and there's murals all throughout the hallways of historic moments. You know, you got Red Auerbach smoking his cigars, you got KG holding the trophy, Paul Pierce, Bill Russell, just so many huge names where I really, like, you know, granted it was a state tournament game, it was a high school venue, a MIA game, but it really made me, like, sit back and realize that this is, like, the cornerstone of NBA history right now, and, you know, the best basketball that has really been ever seen in the state, and we get to share that moment, kind of.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. As far as somebody who worked in the media, I covered a couple of games up there, and just walking in, opening night, 2006, they're playing the then New Orleans Hornets, and it's Red Auerbach night. Red had just passed away, so, you know, it's kind of a big event. So I'm walking down there, I'm walking by the court, watching shoot around. I'm like, this is absolutely insane. Like, just looking up, and you look up at that top row, and I'm looking up, and I'm like, hey, 2002 playoffs? I sat up there, that last row, and, like, look where I am now. And I think one of the most intimidating parts was there was so many of the legends who were there that night because of Red's passing that I went into the media dining room, and I just looked around, and the first person I saw was Tommy Heinsohn sitting there with Mike Gorman, and they were sitting there with the Hornets announcers going back and forth about players, like tidbits. And you just look around, and some of the legends who are sitting down, and I'm like, oh, do I have to ask somebody if I have to sit with them? Like, this is going to feel so weird. Like, hey, you're JoJo White. Do you mind if I sit here and eat my piece of chicken with you? I mean, it's just like, you know, absolutely so intimidating. So I remember I ran to the bathroom. I came back, and there was an open table. So I sat in the open table in the corner and kind of absorbed it all. And as I got up to the ninth floor, I was in the accessory press box that night up top. And you're up there just looking at the banners and just, you know, it's one of those things. And they're talking about Red Auerbach and the history of it, and the game is kind of like secondary to everything going on. It was a special night to be there for my first night covering the Celtics. So I totally know what you're feeling as far as all the murals there and the things you see in the back and the locker room entrance. And, you know, the road locker room is, you know, more towards their bench, whereas the Celtics, when they come off, they got to go a pretty long distance down the hallway to get to theirs. They actually have to go by what is the Bruins locker room to get to the Celtics locker room through the entrance that they use. So it was a pretty cool experience. So, you know, I'm one of the few people who may be able to talk to you about that kind of experience of being down there and seeing, you know, the history and feeling the nostalgia and just the intimidation of the legends. It was just, it really was. It was an unbelievable thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, a little. I wasn't playing on the floor, but I remembered walking on it.
No, you painted the picture better than I did. That just brought me back right there.
Yeah, no, and it is. It's, you would think, because in the NFL, the way the Patriots have it set up, just from my time covering them, they go in that little entrance behind the sideline and they walk straight up and they're in their locker room. That's the weight room side of the locker room. For the road team, they got to cross all the way over, go up, take a left, go down halfway down and get into the road locker room. And the road locker room isn't anything to write home about. It's kind of like old school lockers, you know, nothing like the fine wood finish that the Patriots have in their locker room. And I can remember, we used to call it the Walk of Shame. We're getting a little off topic here, but we used to call it the Walk of Shame. I covered the team in 2007, and that was when the losing team would walk by the media to go into the locker room, and you'd get their natural reaction. And I can remember looking at Sean Merriman as he came off the field, and he just looked at me, and I swear to you, I almost shit my pants. That's how intimidating the dude was. He was so scary and so intimidating, and that was 2007, week two, the 38-14 game.
So that was pre-steroids, right? Pre-steroids, Sean Merriman?
I'm going to say that there was stuff going on getting shipped out to San Diego from this area, and that's all I'll say on that matter. That's all I'll really say on that matter is it was coming from here and going out there. And
it's hence the nickname.
Boy, was that one of the...
out.
Yeah, it was interesting. You don't realize how big some of these guys are. And on the converse side, you really don't realize how small some of these guys are. That's one way
right?
I look about
they're,
it.
They're all muscle heads, so.
Yeah, but like a guy like... I'm trying to think of somebody interesting. Like Danny Woodhead is a little pint of peanuts. Like,
yeah.
Wes Welker is short. Like, Kevin Falk was short and jacked. Like, players
yeah.
like that, like, you know, you stand over them, you're taller than them. It's just the way it is, but you wouldn't mess with them on, you know, their worst day. So as we get off track here a little bit, we got our we want to go through our playoff predictions, what we think is going to happen, because it's 10 seeds this year, right?
There is. There's going to be 10 seeds, you know. Just going to make those one versus seed games a little less enjoyable is what I would say. I don't anticipate any teams that are a 9 or 10 or even a 8, 7, or 6 for that matter, unless it's the Lakers making a run. So, unfortunately, the NBA playoffs are not like March Madness. You know, the better team usually wins, and, you know, they usually move forward.
So have you heard how this tournament's going to work for 7, 8, 9, 10?
I actually need to do some research on that. You got me stumped here. I read the initial package when it first came out that they were going to do the 62-game season, but I actually didn't read towards the playoff structure yet. And have they made a decision yet on whether or not they're going to go, you know, back to Orlando for a bubble atmosphere, or are they going to try and kind of stick it out? It hurt me so badly to hear that VCU wasn't going to be able to play in the tournament given a positive test. You know, if that trickles into the NBA, it's just going to be a really depressing thing. Like, what if my sons all of a sudden have to forfeit the first three games of a playoff series and have to come in and win four in a row? Like, that's something that, as a fan, I would really be kind of depressed about. So I hope the NBA probably has a better hold on it than the NCAA, but I think they have to go back to that bubble format.
Yeah, they may have to, and that is we'll see if they end up back down in Orlando. But the way the playoffs are going to work is the top six seeds are automatically in. So 1 through 6 are in.
Okay.
7, 8, 9, and 10 are playing for 7 and 8. So 7's going to host 8. The winner is the 7 seed. The loser of that game then plays the winner of the 9-10 game. So at this point in time, that would be the Celtics and Heat is 7-8. Let's just say the Celtics hold court, chalk, the Heat lose, and then the Pacers would play the Bulls. Now let's say the Bulls pull the upset as the 10 seed. The Bulls would play the Heat to be the 8 seed and the last seed in the playoffs. Is how it will work out. And then we'd have our 1 through 8 structure. That is how
wow.
the playoffs are set up for this year. So a few play-in games, kind of like the NCAA tournament.
I really hope the Celtics are not in that because I don't know if that's going to work well for us. Given the inconsistency this team has had, I expect the Heat to definitely get some traction and move forward in the playoff hunt. And, you know, if the Celtics happen to be that 7 or 8 and they have to play some more games in order to get into the playoffs, I really hope get sent home. It's given the way we played recently, I wouldn't put that so far past this team. What are your thoughts on that, you know, and the potential chance of drawing the Pacers or the Bulls and hoping it to get into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because, you know, you got a little bit of that rivalry with the Heat left over from last year as you're just ahead of them. I mean, Granted, they are right now a game and a half out of fourth, where the Charlotte Hornets sit right now at 23-22. So if things can kind of gel for any of the following teams, the Hornets, Knicks, Hawks, Celtics, Heat, you can even throw the Pacers in there. I think the Bulls, Raptors, and Wizards are kind of playing for that 10 seed, and we'll see how things pan out. People the other day were saying the Bulls, you know, they're out of everything, so why are they moving, making a move for Vucevic? But they're still in it as the 10 seed and would be in the play-in tournament as of now. If we go to the West, Dallas would play the Spurs in the first game.
Yeah, the West is a little more kind of competitive, but I want to kind of go back to that Chicago Bulls move recently. I know that kind of comment is probably mainstream. A lot of people are like, the Bulls, why would you go to the Bulls? But I'm actually really glad to see that. You know, Vucevic going to Chicago, they got a superstar in Zach LaVine, and I really want that franchise to really develop back into the Bulls that I know. Unfortunately, I never got to see Jordan play in that era, but, you know, I saw Last Dance. I know a good amount about those teams. And then I even think back to the Ben Gordon and Derrick Rose days. You know, playoffs in Chicago are really, really fun and exciting, and I hope that franchise can get back to that square roots of where they were. But talking about the West, you know, the West is something that's just amazing to see. You know, I think of the Jazz, Suns, Clippers, Lakers, and Nuggets are probably five teams that are clearly going to be in. I even would say that the Blazers are probably part of that, but and then you look at the, you know, the Mavericks, Spurs, Grizzlies, and Warriors, and I would even throw the Pelicans up there a little bit. I think they will eventually make a stand, and hopefully that they can get into that 10 seed. But that is a very even-keeled 7 through 10. That's going to be very fun to watch. All these teams have potential. I would say the Mavericks probably have the most firepower out of that group, but you know, Steph in the playoffs, Greg Popovich in the playoffs, John Morant in the playoffs, those are four teams that I just really think are very even and will make those games a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it would be a lot of fun, and Golden State is the 10 would be quite interesting bringing them into this little play-in tournament, and them against Memphis, I think that would be very interesting. And we saw Memphis playing it last year in the in that final, you know, play-in type situation. And we saw Portland get in. That was quite an interesting game last year. So I don't know. It'd be more interesting than the NCAA play-in, but this year, we got UCLA and Michigan State. And look where UCLA is right now out of that. So it would be kind of cool if we got that out of the NBA. It definitely would be.
Yeah, I mean, I got to bring this up. You know, you talked about the bubble last year, and I just want to bring back how amazing Damian Lillard was in the playoffs last year, and yet that team still couldn't get it done. The margin of error for that team is just so small when they go up against kind of these front runners of the West. And I really pull for that team because I know how hard they work and how they've really just kind of been a no-nonsense kind of team. You know, they just kind of get stuff done. They're remarkable every, you know, postseason. I would say that last year they were dynamic. You know, they were hitting on all cylinders, and it just kind of came to light the difference between them and the Los Angeles Lakers. It's just kind of frightening to think about, but you know, Damian Lillard was playing above his average game last postseason, and I expect the same this postseason.
Remember TJ Warren in the bubble last year? What the heck was that?
That was, I don't have any words for that. I have no idea.
Like he was legit putting up like Wilt Chamberlain numbers in the bubble. That's what I was jokingly calling him, Wilt of the bubble. Like, you know, 50 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists, game-winning shots.
I think
I mean, he's shooting the ball from the other side of the court over his head. It's going in. You're just like, what is going on here?
I think quarantine treated him well. I think he became very motivated, not having kind of that public figure and just kind of sitting at home. I think he really took it upon himself to level up, as you would see in the playoffs last year.
So as we get into the last 15-minute show of the Triple Threat Tuesday Hoop Show here on the E2G Sports Network, the Unsung Sports Grid, are we ever going to get consistently out of the Celtics? Like, how many games in a row would a 5-game winning streak result in the duck boats being queued?
I don't know. This whole season I've been optimistic with the Celtics, and I'm starting to come down to earth on just this team doesn't have what it takes right now. We just got swept by the Pelicans. The Pelicans are a better team than on paper, but the New Orleans Pelicans, both games, we brought it close near the end, but both games were significantly better than us. And that's just so bizarre to me, given that we were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. You know, the star power in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. We have just underperformed this entire year. We lost to a bruised and battered Cleveland Cavaliers team. We've lost to the Kings now twice. I just don't know where this team is going, given the inconsistent play and, you know, just the struggles on the defensive end. I just can't speak enough about that, and it really doesn't seem like anything's going to change.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. And I sat there last night and I said, I think they're going to make a little bit of a run because they're home with the crowd. And when a team's down in the fourth quarter, you kind of expect that when they're home, that they're going to make a little bit of a run in the fourth quarter, a little bit of noise. They cut it down to 3. And then, you know, just to give up that shot to Ingram and then to have the play happen with Smart, gets run over, no foul called, the missed shot by Tatum. Smart gets chucked out of the game, kind of puts everything out of reach. They were right there. They needed to make that stop, and they didn't make that stop on Ingram. That was you got to give credit to Ingram, too. I mean, he hits that shot, an 18-foot jumper. Good shot.
He's been doing that a lot this year.
Yeah, he's definitely improved. And it's funny the thing, both him and Randle, you know, two former Lakers, the way they've improved and where they could be if they were still over there, like if they weren't part of the deals, you know what I'm saying there, as far as kept around, maybe how much better the Lakers would feel about themselves with these injuries to LeBron and KD.
It's the LeBron factor. It's the LeBron factor when he goes into a new franchise. The younger players, if they're not, you know, if they're not guys that have already establish themselves, which they weren't at the time, they're gone. We saw it with Andrew Wiggins in Cleveland, and now we see it in L.A., and they're gone in a second, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just curious how AD comes back. I was a huge fan of his in New Orleans. That was the guy I ultimately wanted to be here with the Celtics, just so disheartening to see him go to the Lakers and win a championship as a Celtics fan. It was tough. How
I really
about our
wanted
son?
KD. I
wanted him to. I remember that day at work, just that feeling when the breaking news came and they were like, and Kevin Durant's decision, and they kind of teased it after the Brady visit out to the Hamptons and the whole bit, and they're like, he goes to Golden State. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. But we came in second, you know? Like the consolation prize. Like, do we hang a Indianapolis Colts-like banner that says we almost had KD?
I mean, Tom Brady can't convince you to come. I don't know who can. You know, when that report came out that Tom Brady was sitting at the Garden when KD walked in, I was like, oh, done deal. I'm super excited. I was already looking online for a KD jersey, and unfortunately it didn't end up happening. But it's just one of those things where we missed out, and we're going to continue to miss out, it seems.
it's interesting. You got to think 2 4th of July's in a row all over Twitter. The first one ended quickly with the KD thing. That was like 10:30 in the morning that he made his decision, and that was fine. But do you remember that July 4th with a certain guy named Gordon Hayward and the report coming out about 2 o'clock that he signed? And I was at a cookout, and everybody was happy, and somebody came in and said, no, they're saying that report isn't true. And it wasn't until like 8 o'clock that night, and after you had probably, like, you know, ruined your fingers refreshing on Twitter. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the Adam Schefters of the world that report stuff without actually having any factual evidence. You know, they just kind of speculate and, you know, run the charts, and eventually something comes together. And, you know, I can't stand the reporters that kind of just create stuff that's not really happening. I think about the Russell Wilson trade rumors. I think about, you know, the Carson Wentz saga, where they were saying that Carson Wentz will be traded by the end of the week. And then like a month later, it's like, oh, he's in Indy. We told you that this would happen. And it's like, come on, you guys don't actually have any inside information.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And playing the game of getting info and who to trust is very tough. Kind of like what I proved with the 49ers last week on our Slack conversation, just that they were trying to get up for the Jets pick, and it ultimately ended up being Miami that San Francisco traded with. It's getting sourcing is fun, and I know you have your sources, I have mine, and we do our write-up for ourselves here at E2G, especially the hockey team, too. They do a really good job with their sourcing. Before we jump back into this, just tomorrow, hump day, 10 a.m. here on the E2G Sports Network, and tomorrow night at 8 p.m., MGM. Probably both getting you ready for opening day baseball on Thursday. And Thursday night, the E2G Double Steel Baseball Show, they're going to be going from 8:30 to 10. As the season opens up, they'll be going in 90 minutes. They'll probably have a weather-permitting report on the Red Sox Orioles game on Thursday. Quite interesting. How are you feeling about baseball season this year?
Well, I'm excited. You know, last year was a spitting image of what a short season looked like with a lot of cancellations. And I think this year they'll probably have a better grasp on how to battle the virus. And I'm excited. I think the Red Sox always have a chance, and I'm very excited to be a Boston fan, given the fact that, you know, you never really know what to expect. And all of a sudden we have a newcomer that no one really thought about. It's Rafael Devers, Dustin Pedroia, these guys that just kind of come in through our farm system, and Andrew Benintendi, you know, RIP, but, you know, they're just guys that are come into our farm system and play exceptionally well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And just kind of a thought I have, I'm hoping E2G, we can do really well with sponsorships over the next couple of months, because that signed by the Dodgers, thank you, Mookie Betts, their fans, by Fenway. I want to put up a nice one on the freeway in L.A. with a big asterisk next to the L.A. Dodgers and put 60 games with an asterisk. And they can look at that sign on their way to Dodger Stadium, because that's in Buddy Andrade's wheelhouse right there. That's the way I react to things like that.
Isn't that the year after Dodgers in the finals or the World Series, I mean?
Yeah, a couple of years. Yeah, 2 years later, you know, they win a 60-game season. Yay,
so,
congratulations.
I don't know what they're really trying to stick games, to us.
Yeah, the 162-game season is meant to break you at points in the season where you have your ups and downs. A 60-game season is a nice sprint. It's like, you know, you win the 4x440. When we're winning the marathon, like, you can't compare it. Like, enjoy being who you are, get to the game in the third inning, and hopefully E2G can be able to put that sign up maybe in the next few months. That would be very fun, and we could get a lot of hate mail, and they can see the talent that resides in this organization that we have here, Ryan. So let's plan for that.
That would be amazing.
So as we wrap things up, anything on your sons or any of the other teams in the league that you just enjoy watching?
I mean, I've said it all year. I really enjoy the Suns, but another team that I really, really enjoy watching is the Denver Nuggets. Watching the Denver Nuggets between the first three quarters and the fourth quarter is just very different basketball. They play so efficiently in the fourth quarter where it really makes teams tough. Any team that's in a close game with the Denver Nuggets in the fourth, they have to hit some big shots in order to win that game. You know, Jokic is in great shape. He plays the last 8 minutes, and he plays those minutes really hard. And, you know, if you just stick it to him in the post, he creates plays. You know, they get wide-open threes, they get wide-open layups, and it kind of reminds me of, like, the Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker days in San Antonio, where they're not overly, like, athletic, they're not overly skilled, where they're just kind of dribbling by guys, but they're just breaking defenses down by just wearing them down and getting deep post position. So one of my favorite teams kind of moving forward is the Denver Nuggets, as well as, of course, the Phoenix Suns. I think the Phoenix Suns have a chance to be NBA Finals champions this year. I've been very vocal about that around my friend group and on air. I am really ready for the playoffs, and I hope that that happens exactly.
Beautiful. So as we wrap up here with about 2.5 minutes left, Triple Threat Tuesday Hoop Show, Ryan Beattie there, Buddy Endred on this side, filling in for the great Ryan Edwards tonight. E2G Sports Network, 10 a.m. tomorrow, hump day, one day before the MLB season starts. Those two seam heads, Joe and Sun Chips, two of our executives, a part owner and executive producer, put on a great show. They'll definitely give you great info getting you ready for the Red Sox and every other game on Thursday. MGM tomorrow night, they're baseball fans. Galen's very good with his baseball, did a great job on the fantasy baseball magazine, and the triple threat of double steal. I'm going to keep going triple and double and the whole bit, but the double steal baseball show with Robert and Adam, 8:30 to 10 Thursday night, one of our most popular shows, and they'll take you around opening day, get you feel on the Red Sox, weather permitting, of course, because it's supposed to rain right up until 2 on Thursday, and they put in that extra day on Friday where there's no game, just in case they have to move opening day, so we'll see what happens there. You've been listening again to the Triple Threat Tuesday Hoop Show. Any last thoughts here, Ryan, as we got about a minute 15 left?
It's just that time of year. I'm very, very excited for the postseason stretches, the last second teams that get in. And I'm excited for a couple good games tonight. We got 76ers going up against, let me see here, I think it's the Jazz. Am I wrong?
I don't know. I didn't give a look to the schedule. I had the Bruins planned, and I have a baseball draft with the U2G crew.
76ers-Nuggets, that's
left.
What it is.
We got, so, yeah, that's a very interesting game.
And I think that's going to be a good one tonight. I'm definitely going to be tuning in. So that should be it for me on the Triple Threat Tuesdays, and I thank you for filling in for Ryan Edwards tonight, buddy.
Hey, no problem. That's what I'm here for. I'm the founder, but the utility guy. I love to see my guys get out there and show their greatness, and I was hope I was able to help elevate your game tonight. For Ryan Beattie, I'm Buddy Endred. You're listening to the E2G Sports Network. Next show, 10 a.m. tomorrow, hump day here on E2G Sports, the Unsung Sports Grid.